AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
This is your moment. Your time to shine. Your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured, not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
Welcome to Ethnically Ambiguous, a production of iHeartRadio.
Hi!
Hi.
This is Shireen.
This is Anna.
And this is Ethnically Ambiguous, episode 117.
We talk about what's going on in northern Syria with the Turkish forces going in to do what they do.
Yeah, and
free ISIS prisoners.
Yeah, and I talk about the Arab Syrians that are maybe hopeful to return home with the promise of the safe zone and why this is complicated.
Also, I talk about the connections between ISIS and Turkey.
Mm-hmm. Really lighthearted stuff, you know, just as usual. Don't go anywhere.
Who are we? Where do we come from? Who do we become? What is it to be? What to be is it? Where are we? Who are my parents? Where are my pants? Why were we born? We are Ethnically Ambiguous.
Hi.
Hi.
Can I talk like this the rest of the episode?
I quit. just kidding.
Quill.
Is episode 117 of Ethnically Ambiguous.
117. That's a dead teen.
That's not fun. 117. What have we gleaned from this podcast? I know nothing.
Dead teens. Dead bully teens.
Welcome to Ethnically Ambiguous.
I was thinking of that White Snake song where it's like, here I go again on my own. And I was thinking about a joke my friend Jason told me. This is more of just a stream of conscious beginning. Where he was like, he kind of just looks like an asshole. He's not an asshole, but his whole aesthetic, like he just dresses like cool guy asshole.
Isn't that like one of his bits?
Yeah. And I was just thinking of that bit where he's just like, I know I look like a high school bully who should have died in a drunk driving accident. Yeah. And his whole thing is like acting out, getting roadhead and listening to White Claws. Here I go again, and being like, we're going to live forever before he just drives off a cliff.
Yeah. Shout out Jason Burke.
Because he's a fucking idiot. Because he bullied you and karma got him. Yeah. And that's what I was thinking when I was saying dead teens.
I see.
Your bullies.
Yeah.
Listening to I keep also wanting to call it White Claw, not White Snake, because
that's
the internet wins. Yeah. Internet win
points.
That's me making fun of
the internet.
What was that show? The internet show.
Midnight.
At midnight.
At midnight. Rip. Anyways.
It ripped? Like it died or it just ended?
Well, rip just means like RIP.
Oh, I thought it like they canceled it.
Did it die? It's not around anymore.
No, it's not on anymore. But was it chosen to end or was it actually canceled?
I think it just ended.
But how are comedians going to get credits?
We'll never know. By the time you listen to this, we've already done our Chicago Podcast Festival live show. Because today, we're recording this on a Monday. We're doing it early so we can go to Chicago. We're leaving tomorrow on Tuesday. Yeah.
Here I go again.
I have to go pack.
What is the temp going to be like?
I just looked it up. It's going to be like 60. Well, tomorrow says it's going to be 63 and maybe a little bit rainy. And then Wednesday, Thursday is like in the 50s. So just
it's going to be cold.
Just a scarf. Just a coat and a scarf.
I've only packed board shorts.
But yeah, I'm excited. I've never been to Chicago. I'm really excited to see it for the first time.
It's supposed to rain tomorrow.
It says 40% chance. I mean, we'll be fine.
I don't take chances.
I love rain.
Oh,
rain
we're not even going to be there by the time it rains.
The rain is great. I'm excited. I've always wanted to see Chicago. I've heard only good things.
You've never been?
No, I've never been.
Overrated. I'm just joking. It's fine.
But yeah, so.
The Chicago Marathon was this weekend.
Oh, we missed it. Womp womp.
It's too bad because we're going to go there and everyone's going to be like, yeah, so I just ran the marathon. And we're going to be like, oh, kill us. That's the worst time to go to a city is right after a marathon because everyone's going to be talking about how they just ran a marathon.
How their legs are sore and like how they're just like, we want it.
I always say go right before the marathon. Actually, that's not true because people are still talking about that. They're about to run a marathon. You know what? Go about 6 months after or before a marathon.
But then you're going to be like, we missed the marathon. There's always going to be talk of a marathon anytime you go anywhere.
No, because people aren't going to bring up the marathon unless it's actively in the zeitgeist.
I was kidding.
In the sphere of air.
Yeah.
So well, I guess we'll tell you next week if anyone brought up the marathon.
Or if we run a marathon.
I would never. I'll tell you right now, I'll never train to run. I'll never run to run. I just can't do it. I have no interest.
I mean, it is a very specific task.
You know what I'd rather be doing? Scrolling Instagram.
Yeah. Yeah.
Millennial. Am I a bad person?
No. We are just children of our generation. That's all we are.
Well, you know, that's tough because there are children of our generation who also will run a marathon.
But they're not. They don't have
But they also scroll Instagram. They're just better people.
Yeah.
I was talking to Jacques O'Brien.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I thought you were going to. I was waiting for applause.
Sorry.
I was just joking. And I was like, can I just start a podcast where everything someone tells me, I'm go, you fucking nerd. And he's like, you want to start a podcast where you bully people? I'm like, yeah, I'm a bad person. But I literally wouldn't. It's just a joke because there's something I find it. I was really thinking about it. Like, I find everything nerdy. I just find everything to be corny and nerdy. I'm just not impressed by anything anymore.
I mean, that's also a side effect of like being bombarded with everything at all times, right? Like everything is just, you become jaded. But I think being a nerd is cool. I think if you're like nerding out about something, that means at least you have a passion, right?
I literally just thought, Sharina's such a cornball.
I mean, you're not wrong. You're not wrong.
I was like, what a cornball.
Yeah, well, you're not wrong.
Oh my God, that's so corny. You're like,
in other news.
Everyone should be a nerd. Oh my God.
I'm just trying to become
the character I was describing.
Right.
I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah.
What a
Well, yeah. Are you excited for Chicago?
Yeah. I just realized the show is like, we're like nerdy about the Middle East, which is the corniest thing I've ever said in my life.
We are.
We're like nerding out about the Middle East.
Yeah. It's also like not a fun thing to nerd out about.
No.
It's sad. We're sad
nerds. We're the saddest people.
We're sad nerds.
Okay. Sorry. Am I excited about Chicago?
I mean, I don't know what else to say at this point, at this juncture.
Wow. Okay. We've hit a... You know, that also just reminded me of...
Oh my God.
I watched this documentary... Because I was doing the podcast recently added with Nick Turner and Will Miles, produced by the fabulous Lyra Smith. You watch every week with them. They watch it every week because they run a podcast and have chosen to do this with their lives. But every guest watches all the new releases that came onto Netflix that week.
Mm-hmm.
And my God, it's a lot.
I mean,
but
Netflix is like a cesspool of awful.
So they've seen like everything.
Oh, God.
And the week I watched, I was like, what the fuck is going on?
Yeah.
But there was one thing I watched. It was called it's called Remastered. And I guess there's like a series of these remasters where they talk about like different artists from back in the day. This one was about Robert Johnson, who was a musician back in like the 30s, 40s.
Mm-hmm.
It's called Remastered, Devil at the Crossroads. And the whole story is that he was like a subpar musician And then he went away for a while. He was gone for like a year. Mm-hmm. No one knew where he was. And this is like after he like got married and then his like wife died in childbirth. It's the whole thing. And so everybody wanted to be a musician. Everyone's like, that's not good. And so, and he come from this whole abusive family. It's a whole thing. You know, it was the 30s, you know, African-Americans did not have many rights, maybe you could say. Mm-hmm. They were treated incredibly poorly. Yeah. Reparations, hashtag reparations. But basically, he goes away and he comes back and he's added a fifth string to his guitar and he's this amazing, like, blues player. And everyone's like, how the fuck did he get so good in a year? It doesn't make any sense. Then the rumor started going around that he'd gone to the crossroads and made a deal with the devil. Whoa. Which, in my opinion, is an incredibly racist thing to say, to be like, well, he's black, so clearly he's Christian. It's just like a whole lot of assumptions that uh-huh. were offensive to me. I was like, or maybe he went away for a year and practiced the guitar. A year's a long time to, like, to focus on your art.
Yeah.
Everyone's like, well, he clearly went to the crossroads and made a deal with the devil. And that's, like, why it's called Devil at the Crossroads. But to me, it's like you said Junction. And what is it about crossroads that the devil would be there?
I mean,
clearly it's something I don't understand because I don't know Southern history as well. Right, but, right. like,
I'm assuming that it's like the there's history as far as like the actual origins of why the devil will be at a crossroad, but it's like the same notion of like a devil and angel on your shoulder. Like they're there when a devil is there when you're about to make an important decision. It's always there at the crossroad trying to like influence your decision.
So you would be like, "Hi, I will let you."
Well, it's like Rosemary's Baby or any kind of thing where like you make a deal with the devil to like benefit yourself in some way. And, like be successful and, like, sacrifice everything for the purpose of fame or money or whatever.
So, anyway, to your point, am I excited for Chicago? The devil is telling me no. I don't know. I'm not excited for anything. I am excited to do our live show, though, mm-hmm. and really show people what we're made out of.
You couldn't even say that with a straight face.
No, I mean, it's just a really weird thing to say.
I'm a little nervous for the live show, if I'm being honest.
Why?
Because I don't know what I'm doing.
We've discussed this. You just need to really hone it in.
Okay. Well,
don't second guess yourself so hard.
We haven't really like, it's like more loosey-goosey and I feel kind of unprepared.
We do well in loosey-goosey.
I guess.
We've done this before.
Yeah.
We can come up with something. I mean, we are, okay. Shireen's not giving us enough credit. We have an idea of what we're going to do. Shireen just doesn't
I said I. Well, because I mean like, I don't have a story from the Arab Spring Break thing. It was like a PowerPoint. So
sure, but you can find a way to turn that into a story.
I guess. I don't know.
You don't need the crutch of the PowerPoint because you are also a storyteller, a story writer, a story being. Can we trademark that? Just joking.
Should we get into this episode?
Sure.
Let's get into some news.
Did you go first last time or did I?
I think last time we just started talking about...
Oh, yeah, we did together. Yeah. So what about the time before that?
Well, just you can go ahead and take the reins.
Let's be real. We'll never know at this point because our memories don't go further than 2 minutes. Excuse me as I pull up my document.
Thank you for everyone for your really nice feedback for our episode last week. It was nice that you guys appreciated that we talked to Robert Evans. He's a wealth of knowledge and information. And so maybe we can call him in a future episode because he was physically in Syria, in the area we're talking about. So I'm glad you guys liked his insight.
Yeah, maybe we'll have him back on.
Yeah.
In person.
Yeah.
So actually, I wanted to touch on this really quickly because last week we got some feedback. People were asking about the other ethnic groups in that area of Rojava that we didn't touch on as much because Robert mentioned them briefly, but we didn't get into detail. It's because, you know, we never have time for anything. We barely have time for the show. To do the show during the show.
Yeah.
So I kind of wanted to mention a few other ethnic groups and kind of give a background, quick background, before I get into my full piece. So two ethnic groups that have a significant presence, the Kurds and then Arabs, which you may have heard of. We spoke about the Kurds.
Do you hear that?
Last week. Yeah, it's a truck outside.
Oh.
But I also want to talk about two other ethnic groups that are in that area, which is the Assyrians. They're mostly... And this is according to Wikipedia. Their presence in Syria is in the Jazira region of the autonomous region, particularly in the urban areas of Qamishli, Al-Hasaka, Ras Ayn, I don't know if I'm saying any of these right, Al-Malikaya, and Al-Qatania, which is the northeastern corner, and they're in villages along the Khabar if I were to say it Persian style, you wouldn't pronounce the K, but you guys might pronounce the K, which is Khabur, Khabar River and the Tel Tamer area. And they traditionally speak varieties of Syriac Aramaic, which is a Semitic language. And there are many Assyrians among recent refugees to northern Syria who are fleeing Islamist violence elsewhere in Syria back to their traditional lands. In the secular polyethnic political climate of the region, the Daronoye modernization movement has a growing influence on the Syrian identity in the 21st century. And the Daronoye is a secular leftist nationalist movement among the Syrian people. And ideologically, it's characterized by progressive ideas, including socialist elements. And its founding roots can be traced back to the late 1980s in the town of Midyat in Turkey. Another ethnic group that we didn't touch on are the Turkmen, which are an ethnic group with a major presence in the area between the Afrin region and the Euphrates region, where they form regional majorities in the countryside from Azaz and Mare to Jarabulus. You know, a lot of ethnic minorities come to these regions. It's kind of like like the Arabs all come from different countries, obviously. You know, there's like Bedouin tribes and other indigenous peoples that have pre-existed the Arab groups. There's many different groups in that region, and it's hard to focus on them all. When we were kind of talking about our stuff last week, the situation in northern Syria with the Turkey trying to come in. So I apologize if anyone felt left out. We should have did a better job of discussing all the groups, but we're trash. Yeah. So what can you do?
Well, I will say that Assyrians in particular, there's just a huge history there that I need to be more learned on. And I would love to make like a whole segment about them in the future, because similar to the Armenians, they also had a genocide around the same time with the Ottoman Empire and everything, and they've been persecuted for a lot of their lives, and they're kind of dispersed everywhere. And it's a really rich culture with a lot of history. So stay tuned for that. Eventually, I would love to cover Assyrian culture, but apologies if it felt like we left that out, because I do think, especially with the Syrian war and the Syrian conflict, and now with the Kurdish conflict and everything, they're also displaced just as much as anyone else, and they kind of don't have anywhere to go for the most part, because they keep getting pushed out of the places that they were. So, yeah.
So, I'm going to talk about the five ISIS militants who broke out of prison. So, they broke out of a prison in northern Syria after a Turkish shelling nearby went off. That's according to a spokesperson in the Kurdish-led Syrian Democratic Forces, or SDF. The detainees escaped from a prison in Kamashli city, according to Marvan Kamishlo. Interesting. His last name is very similar to the city. Meanwhile, women affiliated with ISIS attacked security offices with sticks and stones during unrest at a camp in the region where Turkey has launched attacks. Which is just ISIS brides, right? Like, that's a really scary concept, but very real. So the unrest at Al-Hol camp started in the foreigner section and involved more people than previous incidents at the camp, according to Mr. Kamishlo. A video of the disturbance, which is distributed by the SDF and shot from a distance, showed around 20 fully covered women running in open space with several men appearing to pursue them. It came as ISIS claimed responsibility for a car bomb attack in Kamishli, which killed 3 people. And on Thursday last week, a Kurdish official warned that ISIS detainees could break out of detention as Kurdish-led security forces confront the Turkish offensive, and their ability to guard these detainees is weakened. And then, you know, Turkish forces have pushed deeper into Syria on the third day after Ankara, which is the capital of Turkey, launched a cross-border offensive against Kurdish fighters. Thousands of civilians have fled the violence as international criticism of the incursion intensified. At least 9 civilians are reported to have been killed in Turkey and several more in Syria since the beginning of the operation. And the UN estimated at least 100,000 people have been displaced. So on that note, we're going to take a quick commercial break, and then I'm going to come back and discuss why I wanted to talk about that story.
This is Amy Brown from Four Things with Amy Brown. Today, healthier is happening at CVS Health in more ways than you've ever seen. It's wellness destinations for seniors, including select locations with Oak Street Health and CVS Pharmacy. It's doctors, nurses, pharmacists, and everyone in between offering quality care and support virtually, in person, and on the phone. It's in-home evaluations through Signify Health and meeting mental health needs through Aetna. And those are just a few of the ways that healthier is happening. To see more, visit cvshealth.com/healthierhappenstogether. CVS Pharmacy, Oak Street Health, CVS Specialty, Signify Health, and Aetna are part of CVS Health. Eligibility and services vary by location and individual.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
And we're back. How exciting. I didn't mean to make that sound so sad. Before the break, I was talking about how some ISIS militant members were able to escape from a prison in Qamishli, which is a city. But I kind of want to talk about, I discussed this a little last week, about Turkey having a history of collaborating with the Islamic State, ISIS. And these allegations, they range from military cooperations and weapon transfers to logistical support, financial assistance, and the provisions of medical services, as in if one of them gets shot or hurt and they need help, they can look to Turkey. Turkey has turned a blind eye to ISIS attacks against the city of Kobani. Of course, you know, President Erdogan of Turkey and Prime Minister Ahmet Davutoglu, that's so Turkish. Of course, sorry. They strongly deny their complicity with ISIS. Erdogan visited the Council on Foreign Relations on September 22nd, 2014, and he criticized smear campaigns and attempts to distort perception about us. He said, a systematic attack on Turkey's international reputation is happening, and he complained that Turkey has been subject to very unjust and ill-intentioned news items from media organizations. He goes on to say, my request from our friends in the United States is to make your assessment about Turkey by basing your information on objective sources. And this was 2014. So could you imagine that this fool, this is like a weird predation of Trump being like, fake news.
Right.
So our homies over at Columbia University's program on peace building and rights, I don't know anyone, I don't know why I said homies, they assigned a team of researchers in the U.S., Europe, and Turkey to examine Turkish and international media, assessing the credibility of the allegations. The report drew on a variety of international sources, the New York Times, Washington Post, The Guardian, The Daily Mail, BBC, Sky News, as well as Turkish sources such as CNN Turk, Hurriyet Daily News, Taraf, Cumhuriyet, and Radical, among others. So here are some of the allegations that I wanted to share that was discovered, founded. Turkey has been providing military equipment to ISIS. An ISIS commander told Washington Post on August 12, 2014, most of the fighters who joined us in the beginning of the war came via Turkey, and so did our equipment and supplies. That's an ISIS commander. Why would he lie? I don't know. Of course, who knows who's telling, you know, like, why would he lie? I don't know. He's an ISIS. Why is he an ISIS?
Right.
Long, complicated history. Kemal Kil... Oh, God, these Turkish last names. Kılıçdaroğlu, head of the Republican People's Party, CHP, produced a statement from the Adana office of the prosecutor on October 14, 2014, maintaining that Turkey supplied weapons to terror groups. He also produced an interview transcripts from truck drivers who delivered weapons to the groups. According to Kemal, the Turkish government claims that the trucks were for humanitarian aid to the Turkmen, which was an ethnic group I mentioned earlier, but the Turkmen said no humanitarian aid was delivered.
Interesting.
According to CHP Vice President Bülent Tezkan, three trucks were stopped in Adana for inspection. The trucks were loaded with weapons in Esenboga Airport in Ankara. Ankara, again, the capital of Turkey. The drivers drove the trucks to the border, where a MIT agent was supposed to take over and drive the trucks to Syria to deliver materials to ISIS and groups in Syria. This happened many times. When the trucks were stopped, MIT agents tried to keep the inspectors from looking inside the crates. The inspectors found rockets, arms, and ammunitions. Cumhuriyet, which is a news source, reports that Fuat Avni, a preeminent Twitter user who reported on the December 17th corruption probe, that audio tapes confirm that Turkey provided financial and military aid to terrorist groups associated with Al-Qaeda in 2014. On the tapes, Erdogan pressured the Turkish armed forces to go to war with Syria. Erdogan demanded that Hakan Fidan, the head of Turkey's National Intelligence Agency, MIT, come up with a justification for attacking Syria. Hakan Fidan told Prime Minister Ahmet Davutoğlu, Yasir Güler, a senior defense official, and Feridun Sinirglu, these names are tough, a senior foreign affairs official, if need be, I'll send four men into Syria. I'll formulate a reason to go to war by shooting eight rockets into Turkey. I'll have them attack the tomb of Suleyman Shah. Documents surfaced then showing that the Saudi Emir Bender bin Sultan financed the transportation of arms to ISIS through Turkey. A flight leaving Germany dropped off arms in the Etimesgut airport in Turkey, which was then split into three containers, two of which were given to ISIS and one to Gaza. So this is the allegation that Turkey provided transport and logistical assistance to ISIS fighters. According to Radikal, Interior Minister Muammer Güler, I am horrible with these names, signed a directive. According to our regional gains, we will help al-Nusra militants against the branch of PKK, terrorist organization, the PYD, within our borders. Those are the Kurdish groups, which have been deemed terrorist organizations, as I said, PKK. Hatay is a strategic location for the Mujahideen crossing from within our borders to Syria. Logistical support for Islamist groups will be increased, and their training, hospital care, and safe passage will mostly take place in Hatay. MIT and the Religious Affairs Directorate will coordinate the placement of fighters in public accommodations. It's like they'll put them in hotels.
Interesting.
So they can rest up and get back to ISIS-ing.
Mm-hmm.
Britain's Sky News obtained documents showing that Turkish government has stamped passports of foreign militants seeking to cross Turkey border into Syria to join ISIS. The BBC interviewed villagers who claim that buses travel at night carrying jihadists to fight Kurdish forces in Syria and Iraq, not the Syrian armed forces. And a senior Egyptian official indicated that Turkish intelligence is passing satellite imagery and other data to ISIS. And then there was an allegation that Turkey provided training to ISIS fighters. CNN Turk reported that in the heart of Istanbul, places like Düzce and Adapazarı have become gathering spots for terrorists. There are religious orders where ISIS militants are trained. Some of these training videos are posted on the Turkish ISIS propaganda website, takvahaber.net. According to CNN Turk, Turkish security forces could have stopped these developments if they had wanted to. And Turks who have joined an affiliate of ISIS were recorded at a public gathering in Istanbul. And a video shows an ISIS affiliate holding a prayer gathering in Omeli, which is a district of Istanbul. In response to the video, CHP Vice President MP Tanarikulu submitted parliamentary questions to the Minister of the Interior, Efkan Ala, asking questions such as, is it true that a camp or camps have been allocated to affiliate to an affiliate of ISIS in Istanbul? What is this affiliate? Who is it made up of? Is the rumor true that the same area allocated for the camp is also used for military exercises? You think they're told the truth? Kemal Kılıçdaroğlu, he warned the AKP government not to provide money and training to terror groups. He said, it isn't right for armed groups to be trained on Turkish soil. You bring foreign fighters to Turkey, put money in their pockets, guns in their hands, and you ask them to kill Muslims in Syria. We told them to stop helping ISIS. Ahmet Davutoğlu asked for us to show proof. Everyone knows that they're helping ISIS. And then I'll post some links that... Shady shit. Everybody is shady. And then, according to Jordanian intelligence, Turkey trained ISIS militants for special operations.
So the proof is in the pudding.
Yes. And here's some proof that Turkey offers medical care to ISIS fighters.
Yeah.
An ISIS commander told the Washington Post, we used to have some fighters, even high-level members of the Islamic State, getting treated in Turkish hospitals.
Hmm. So there's clear cut. There's proof everywhere.
Mm-hmm. Taraf, which is a news source in Turkey, reported that Dengir Mir Mehmet Firat, who's the founder of AKP, said that Turkey supported terrorist groups and still supports them and treats them in hospitals. In order to weaken the developments in Rojava, Syrian Kurdistan, the government gave concessions and arms to extreme religious groups. The government was helping the wounded. The Minister of Health said something such as, it's a human obligation to care for the ISIS wounded.
Hmm.
I don't know about that.
I mean, I can see why it would be an obligation to care for the wounded, regardless of where they're from, but it's like kind of pushing the moral like maybe ground.
And then after you help them, put them in jail.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
According to Taraf, the new source, Ahmet LH, one of the top commanders at ISIS and al-Baghdadi's right-hand man, al-Baghdadi's the head of ISIS, or one of the, what are they called, like?
Commanders?
Like generals. I don't know. They all have like weird titles that they think they're like in the military, but I guess that's how they've seen themselves, as like a militia.
Mm-hmm.
So this right-hand man of al-Baghdadi, he was treated at a hospital in Sanilirufa, Turkey, along with other ISIS militants. And the Turkish state paid for their treatment. According to Taraf sources, ISIS militants are being treated in hospitals all across southeastern Turkey. More and more militants have been coming in to be treated since the start of airstrikes. To be more specific, 8 ISIS militants were transported through Sanilirfa border crossing. And then this link gives their names, but it's not like you guys don't know who they are, so it doesn't really matter. You can go look at the link if you'd like to see their actual names. And then Turkey supports ISIS financially through purchase of oil.
Hmm.
Apparently, the New York Times reported on the Obama administration's efforts to pressure Turkey to crack down on ISIS' extensive sales network for oil. James Phillips, a senior fellow at the Heritage Foundation, argues that Turkey has not fully cracked down on ISIS sales network because it benefits from a lower price for oil, and there might even be Turks and government officials who benefit from the trade.
Hmm. Corruption? No way.
Apparently, there's also illegal pipelines transporting oil from Syria to nearby towns in Turkey. The oil is sold for as little as 1.25 liras. Per liter, I honestly could not translate. It's very cheap. Very small.
It's very, very cheap. The lira is very cheap compared to the dollar.
Yeah, apparently these pipelines were dismantled after the article published the fact that they exist, because they're probably like, oh shit. There was also, according to Decon and Oda TV, a Justice Department official said that there are Turkish individuals acting as middlemen to help sell ISIS oil through Turkey. Yeah, so whatever. This is fucking stupid. And then, Turkey assists ISIS recruitment. It's claimed that ISIS offices in Istanbul and Gaziantep are used to recruit fighters. And the Mufti of Konya said that 100 people from Konya joined ISIS in 4 days. Whoa. And there will be links showing more info for that. You just got to click through and see all that. Oda TV reports that Tagfa Haber serves as a propaganda outlet for ISIS to recruit Turkish-speaking individuals in Turkey and Germany. The address where this propaganda website is registered corresponds to the address of a school called Irfan Koleji, which was established by İlim Yayma Vakfı, which is a foundation that was created by Erdogan and Davutoğlu, among others. That's crazy.
That is crazy.
The president. Oh, it is thus claimed that the propaganda site is operated from the school of the foundation started by AKP members. It's so complicated. Like, how do all these people know each other?
Just a web of corruption.
There's apparently, video. This Oda TV released a video allegedly showing ISIS militants riding a bus in Istanbul.
Whoa.
It's like that. It's just so in
That's
the clear.
So casual.
But of course, if you don't know, you don't know.
Right.
You're not thinking twice. You're not trying to be like, are they ISIS?
Right. You don't want to be that guy.
And then, there's evidence that Turkish forces are fighting alongside ISIS.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to touch on these real quick. A militant Islamic organization in Turkey, going by IBDA/C, they pledged support to ISIS. A Turkish friend who is a commander in ISIS suggests that Turkey is involved in all of this and that 10,000 ISIS members will come to Turkey. A Hudapar member at the meeting claims that officials criticize ISIS but in fact sympathize with the group. And Hudapar, which is the Free Cause Party, is a Kurdish Sunni fundamentalist political party. BBP members claim that National Action Party officials are close to embracing ISIS. In the meeting, it is asserting that ISIS militants come to Turkey frequently to rest as though they are taking a break from military service. They claim that Turkey will experience an Islamic revolution and Turks should be ready for jihad, which is dark as fucking shit.
Whoa.
Also, a member of the parliament with the People's Democratic Party claimed that Turkish special forces fight with ISIS, which I don't fucking know what that means, but it's very confusing. And there is... I don't fucking know. And then Seymour Hersh maintains in the London Review of Books that ISIS conducted sarin attacks in Syria and that Turkey was informed. For months, there had been acute concern among senior military leaders and the intelligence community about the role in the war of Syria's neighbors, especially Turkey. Prime Minister Erdogan also known to be supporting the Al-Nusra Front, a jihadist faction among the rebel opposition, as well as other Islamist rebel groups. According to a U.S. intelligence official who has access to current intelligence, we knew there were some in the Turkish government who believed they could get Assad's nuts in a vice by dabbling with a sarin attack inside Syria and forcing Obama to make good on his red line threat. So it's all a giant fucking game.
Well, Obama never actually did make good on that threat because he didn't actually do anything. He just like said it was like, this is the red line. Don't use gas on your people. And then he did over and over and nothing happened.
Yeah. But they just treat it all like it's like, hey, if I do this, then he'll do that. It's like, okay, why don't you fucking care about the human lives?
Yeah.
There's so much more evidence. I'll post it all in the footnotes because it's a lot to go through. And it's just what I went through was a lot. So it's just out there. Like, it's not exactly being hidden.
Yeah, it's very in the open.
It's really wild to me.
It's kind of shameless.
It is very shameless because you're like, okay, but like, we can see you.
Right.
And we can see what you're doing. And you're denying it.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, just fucking stop.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I guess you can come up with your own ideas, but like,
that's like not shady shit. They should be held accountable for that. And nothing is actually being...
And there's a really good foreign policy article that I'll post in the footnotes that basically says Turkish-backed forces are freeing Islamic State prisoners on purpose. They're doing it on fucking purpose.
Wow.
Yeah. They don't give a fuck. They just want to ethnically cleanse the Kurds and whoever else they fucking want to.
Yeah. It's complicated, though, because you have so many different... Like, and because so many people have been displaced, you have different populations that are struggling and or benefiting from all of this. So, for example, the Arab Syrians that have been displaced from northwest Syria and Syria in general, like maybe like some of them probably are looking like are hopeful about the Turkish push to make this like the safe zone for Syrians. And that's what I want to get into in my section, just not playing devil's advocate as much as like humanizing the population that is just has been subjected to displacement and they have nowhere else to go. And the evil powers that be that are like controlling the region, they're not really considering the families that they're affecting so much. So, yeah. Anything else in your doc?
No, it's just all going to be in the footnotes because it's a lot of information. Like, there's so much info that there's a Wikipedia going through the connections and like the wars they fought and the terrorist attacks that were basically like designated by
you know, shady when like the government is releasing known terrorists, whether it's from ISIS or like a while back when the Syrian government released people from Al Qaeda like in their prisons. Like there's always like a hidden motive that's very disgusting and I don't know, demonic, I guess. There's evil people that somehow control vast nations. We're going to take a quick commercial break. And when we come back, I'm going to talk a little bit about the displaced Arab Syrians that might be hopeful about returning to their home amid all of this Turkish pushing shadiness. So we'll be right back.
This is Amy Brown from Four Things with Amy Brown. Today, Healthier is happening at CVS Health in more ways than you've ever seen. It's wellness destinations for seniors, including select locations with Oak Street Health and CVS Pharmacy. It's doctors, nurses, pharmacists, and everyone in between offering quality care and support virtually, in person, and on the phone. It's in-home evaluations through Signify Health and meeting mental health needs through Aetna. And those are just a few of the ways that Healthier is happening. To see more, visit cvshealth.com/healthierhappenstogether. CVS Pharmacy, Oak Street Health, CVS Specialty, Signify Health, and Aetna are part of CVS Health. Eligibility and services vary by location and individual.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
And we're back. Okay, so I mentioned I wanted to talk about the Arab Syrians that have been displaced. There's a really good article that I'm going to read from Al Jazeera by this woman named Farah Najjar. So she's basically saying that amid the Turkish push, displaced Arab Syrians, they're eyeing a return to their homeland. And Ankara's cross-border assault on Kurdish fighters, it raises the hopes of return to return home for a lot of Arab Syrians that have been displaced in Turkey. So as I said, it's just a complicated issue where there are people that are in the midst of all of this that there's no, I think that's why it's kind of morally questionable, because there's no, not, there's going to be someone that loses either way. There's going to be someone that wins either way. There's no like black and white morally right answer. So I wanted to bring this up. And so this article starts off following a man, Khalil El-Hassan. He stands on the roof of his brick home. He gazes into the distance toward the other side of the border. And right now we're in Akakel on the Turkey-Syria border. So Khalil, he fled to Akakel, which is a town on the Turkish side of the frontier, about 4 years ago. And he points to the clouds of smoke rising above the big trees surrounding his village of Abdikoy, which is about 4 kilometers or 2.5 miles into the Syrian territory near the town of Tel Abyad. He says, "If it's safe, I take my family back in a heartbeat." He's now 65 years old, and he was a farmer, and he's an ethnically Arab Syrian who was forced to leave his ancestral land in northeast Syria after the arrival of the Kurdish forces. He says, "There's nothing more precious than our land." For the first time in 4 years, hope appears to have returned for Al-Hassan and thousands of ethnically Arab Syrians who believe a Turkish operation in northeast Syria will grant them safe access to the stretch of territory they claim is their own. So for nearly a week, fighters with the opposition Free Syrian Army, they've been backing Ankara and its push aimed at driving the Kurdish-led Syrian Democratic Forces, the SDF, away from the border area. So the SDF, it's spearheaded by the Kurdish People's Protection Units, or the YPG. It was founded in 2015 to assist the United States in its battle against the Islamic State, aka ISIS, in the region. So again, the SDF, it was founded in 2015, assisting the U.S. battling ISIS in the region. It significantly expanded its control across northern and eastern Syria, and it sought to create this autonomous federation along the lines of the Rojava region. However, Ankara slash Turkey, it views the SDF as an extension of the outlawed Kurdistan's Workers' Party, the PKK, and it has long made clear that it wants to clear the border area from, quote, terrorist elements. The PKK has waged decades-long armed campaigns inside Turkey and is considered a terrorist group by Turkey and Ankara and many Western capitals. I keep saying Ankara, but Ankara is Turkey's capital, for those of you that don't know. So this article has pictures of this man that they're following, Khalid Al-Hassan, and it shows his home, this fledgling home that he's made for himself on the other side of the border, and his tribe, the Qays tribe, Q-A-Y-S, Qays maybe, or Qays. I'm not sure what letter they're trying to reinvent with that Q, as far as the Arabic letter is concerned. But his tribe is one of the many Syrian Arab tribes in the country's Jazeera region, which is the largest of the three original regions of the de facto Kurdish Autonomous Administration of North and East Syria. This region includes three major governorates, and I mentioned these earlier, Deir Ezzor, Hasaka, and Raqqa, as well as Ain al-Arab, which is an area that falls under the Aleppo's governance administration. With some 4.5 million people, the northeastern Syrian region is predominantly inhabited by Arabs, with Kurds accounting for more than an estimated 10% of its population. Prior to 2015, Al-Hassan said they happily coexisted with their Kurdish neighbors, who were a minority among the ethnically Arab tribes of the area. He says that they lived side by side for years, but one day they turned against us, and with the armed YPJ, they took the area from the opposition fighters. Al-Hassan said he fled his village with eight of his children when the YPJ, quote, showed up 4 years ago. All I wanted was for them to be safe, especially after losing my 18-year-old to their firearms. At this point in the article, he's moved inside his house with the reporter and he's speaking under a fluorescent light bulb that's lighting up his living room and talking about his memories of his son, Nafir, who died after the arrival of the Kurdish forces in the village. He recounts that Nafir, he was holding a rifle and refused to leave his family home on the edge of about 15 dunams or 12 acres of farmland. And then he says the YPJ, arriving with heavy machine guns and assault rifles, flattened the village, quote unquote. He says, that day I not only lost my son, but also my home and my land, which proudly was our only source of livelihood. Again, he was a farmer, and he says all this with a broken voice, the reporter says. He's fighting back tears, and he says, I lost my world. According to Al-Hassan, the village locals were accused of supporting, quote, terrorist ISIS fighters, which at their peak in 2015 controlled large swaths of land across Syria and Iraq. He said that we tried explaining that we were just honest farmers who would die for our land, and even with documentation that carried the family's tribal name that proved ownership of the land, Al-Hassan said he was told to rip the paper up into pieces. And despite being cleared in March 2017 by a UN investigation of committing rights violations against ethnic groups, the YPJ has been accused by rights groups such as the Human Rights Watch and Amnesty International of various abuses. In October 2015, Amnesty accused the YPG of forcibly evicting Arabs and Turkmens from areas they took control of after driving ISIS out. It said the instances of forced displacement and demolition and confiscation of civilian property constitute, quote, war crimes. And these are allegations that the SDF denied. Al-Hassan's daughter, Mona, she fled Tel Abyad's city center with her husband and two children in 2016. She said she was among the lucky ones for still having a standing home on the other side. She says, "My husband and I worked hard to buy the land and build our home on it." She's 35 years old. And she says, "We had moved in just 2 years before. It was not an easy escape," she says. And she says the YPJ, I keep saying J, but it's just, I feel like it's just those fucking, how I, my, the language barrier. "It was not an easy escape," Mona said. "The YPG bullets targeted us even as the, even the truck we drove off in." Her sister-in-law, who remains on the other side of the border, told her that her home was looted soon after she left for Turkey. And she says that every time I go up the hill at the end of the road, I can see all the villages in Tel Abyad. And she says she's eager to return. "I can see the big tree planted in my garden from the top of the hill. There's nothing more difficult than seeing your home and not being able to return to it." So in this article, there's a map of Syria breaking down who controls what. It's very informative, and it's a really helpful map. So look at the footnotes below if you guys want to see. It's an Al Jazeera article. If you scroll down, you'll see the map of Syria, and there's like, it's color coordinated with a key. So the Syrian government forces are still controlling the vast majority of Syria. There's the Kurdish forces, Turkey's proposed safe zone. The rebel forces are still small, but there. They also identify Israeli-occupied Golan Heights in the southwestern corner of Syria. But I think it's a very informative map just to kind of like get the lay of the land, because talking about what's southwest or northeast or whatever, I think it's easier to see visually. So look at the map if you guys want to follow along. But Ankara/Turkey, has long said that it wants to create a so-called safe zone into the neighboring Syria's northeastern region, where some of the 3.6 million refugees currently residing in Turkey can be returned to. Earlier suggestions indicated that the buffer zone would span a stretch of territory about 120 kilometers wide and 30 kilometers deep, which is 75 by 19 miles inside Syria. But Turkish president said on Sunday last week, the area may be wider, running between the towns of Hasaka and Kobane, which is a stretch of about 273 miles. And this announcement promoted a reaction from the Syrian government. It came after Turkish-backed forces claimed control over parts of Ras Al Ain and Tel Abyad, which is two of the main towns initially targeted in the operation. This also came after Turkish forces and their Syrian allies seized the town of Saluk on Sunday, last Sunday, which lies southeast of Tel Abyad, approximately 6 miles from the border with Turkey. This particular advancement was hailed by Ismail al-Habib, a 51-year-old judge from Saluk, who says the operation has, quote, given him purpose again. After fleeing the Syrian government air raids from Saluk in 2012, al-Habib's family, who had moved closer to the border with Turkey, packed some of their belongings and drove past the border 3 years later. He says, "I was wanted by ISIL, so toward the end, my family and I literally fled for our lives." In June 2016, the YPG forces entered Saluk and its surrounding villages, forcing more than 30,000 people to flee, half of whom fled to Turkey, according to al-Habib. The 51-year-old judge said he finally felt confident that he would return to his hometown soon and was keen to offer his expertise to reintroduce safety and security to the area. He says enthusiastically that, "As a judge, I feel like I have a lot to offer. People who fled have witnessed a lot of hardship and need a governing model that acknowledges that, one that offers them direction and care." Al-Hassan's brother resides in the same two-story building with his children and his wife. He said that, "We hope to be back within 6 months," he said. For years, Al-Hassan said he turned down opportunities to migrate to Europe and instead chose to remain just a few kilometers away from his hometown with the hopes of one day returning. And he says there is nothing like returning to a place where everyone knows who you are, where you can make a difference, and most importantly, where you can live without fear. So I know last week we talked about the Kurds being persecuted and Turkey using the safe zone as an excuse to ethnically cleanse them. While that very likely is the case, I think the promise of a safe zone is giving a lot of Arab Syrians that have been displaced a lot of hope of returning back home. And I think it's so unsettling and unfortunate because you have so many different people that have so much hope based on this like empty promise of a safe zone or an empty promise of returning back to where they were. But there's going to be someone, a group of people that are going to be displaced no matter what. And I think that's the most devastating part of all of this is that these leaders are playing with enormous amounts of lives. But when I read this article, I thought it was important to touch on just so you can get the other side of it, of Syrians that are in Turkey that are being told that the safe zone might be a possibility. And of course, if you were displaced from your home just kilometers away, you'd want to go back. But I think the implications of the safe zone are a lot more sinister than that, because it does imply the Kurdish people will be pushed out again. So
also, I feel like it's dark in that because Erdogan doesn't have any, there's no sincerity in his plans. Like he's actually, yeah. He's just like, oh, I don't want you Syrians in my goddamn country.
Exactly. But that's why I wanted to bring this up, is because there's sinister plans that have this surface level of genuine care, being like even the word safe zone sounds like they're just trying to sugarcoat it into what it actually is, which is just like, get out of my country into this other zone, like just go back. But it doesn't stop Syrians from having hope, because I think a lot of Syrians have been displaced and of course they're hopeful to go back. Like you were forced to leave your home. And in this case, this family lost a son. The Kurdish fighters like demolished their village. So there's going to be resentment there. And I think that's the scary part, is because I feel like I can imagine these resentments building up into something more extreme. And that's what makes me fearful, is that you're kind of like, they've planted the seeds for more segregation. And I don't like that. Like, I don't know.
It's just a lose-lose.
It really is.
Only people that win are what? That if the Syrians can go home, yeah, they would have to rebuild their lives. But then Erdogan gets rid of Syrian refugees that he doesn't want in his country, because I don't fucking know, dude.
Yeah.
Why is Erdogan so evil?
It just feels like these leaders are gambling with thousands of lives at a time.
It's really crazy to me that like Middle Eastern leaders do not seem to understand that they are no different from their people.
They have this entitlement, like, I don't know. It just makes me sick. It just, everything makes me sick. And yeah, I don't know. I think just important to know, because I think a lot of times when people ask me about Syria or even the Middle East, there's like they're expecting there to be a good and a bad guy, or like what's the solution, what's the right way to go. But the reality is there's good people that are going to get caught in the crossfire either way. There are good innocent families that are going to get caught in the crossfire regardless of what the answer is. So there isn't a black and white answer. There's no good guy, there's no bad guy. Like, there's just people that are trying their best to survive, getting caught in the middle of these stupid leaders with their oil and their money and their pride and their like swallowing up of land that isn't theirs. So it's like, that's what makes me frustrated. Because I wish there was a clear and cut solution where I could be like, yeah, this so-and-so, this A, X, Y, and Z has to happen for these people to survive and be happy. But that's never the case. There's no one answer that I can give anybody. So just keep an open mind, get all the information you can, but at the end of the day, there's going to be casualties. And I think that's the reality that is really hard for me to accept, is because it makes me mad that leaders, they shouldn't even be called leaders. They're just fucking, they're gambling with lives that they think are beneath them. So yeah, that's what I want to talk about. And I would strongly recommend any further need or want for information, just go to Al Jazeera. They have so many articles that are so amazing to like simple, like they break it down for you in a way that's digestible. It's really good news.
Also, they have a page that is constantly updating about what's going on between the Kurds and the Turkish-backed forces and all that.
Yeah, if you go to aljazeera.com, there's like a tab right at the top where
also
you can
what's one called? Put it in our footnotes.
Mm-hmm. So you can keep up with various news stories about the Middle East, but particularly this one, they have a whole, they're constantly updating it. it's a good news reporting, and it's just, I don't know. So, well, there's that episode. Yeah. And happy belated Yom Kippur to all our Jewish friends. I took photos at Yom Kippur last week for the Silver Lake Independent Jewish Community Center. It's pretty amazing. I really appreciate a culture that can be musical. And I think the more progressive, like less Orthodox Jews, they kind of are more like musical and like liberal with their practice, I guess. And it was really nice to watch. And like everyone was wearing white because it's like a day of repenting and kind of trying to ask forgiveness for the new year. So yeah, it was kind of nice being able to like be a witness to these traditions that I was kind of uninformed about, because even though I have my own qualms about religion, I think it's more about culture and it's more about community than it is about anything. So until next time, follow us.
And yawn.
Follow us at Ethnically Amb, A-M-B, on Twitter, and Ethnically Ambig, A-M-B-I-G, on Instagram. We have a website, ethnicallyambiguouspod.com, and we have merch at tpublic.com/ethnicallyambiguous. Also, go write us a review if you like our show, and we'll read it out loud on an episode if it's 5 stars and no less. It has to be 5 stars and less. So go on iTunes or your podcast app and leave us a nice and quick 5-star review.
Yes.
Yeah.
Do that.
Do it.
It should be detailed, minimum 5 paragraphs.
No, please.
Something that could take up an entire episode, so I don't have to do anymore. I don't have to read about sadness anymore.
Yep. Oh, I'm Shiro Hero on Instagram, SHEERO HERO, and Shiro Hero 666 on Twitter.
And I'm at Anna at, I mean, I'm at Anna Hosnier at, wait. On Twitter, I'm at Anna Hosnier.
There you go. Last but not least,
thanks to everyone who came to our Chicago show.
Oh, yeah. An early thank you, because we're recording this before. Mm-hmm. So it better have gone well. I hope it went well. I really do. I really do like being on stage, though. I like comedy, and I like reading poems. So I'm excited about that performance aspect. So I think being on stage is really fun for me. But I'm excited to meet people if you guys are there. So until then,
hey, bite that ass.
I will bite that ass.
Ethnically Ambiguous is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union, a savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Hey, guys. Back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah. And some waves. So we could go surfing.
Oh, yeah. Ah, love that.
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in.
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it.
Can a girl go shopping?
Yeah, baby.
Wait. Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.